All right. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? The time is now 6 o'clock, which means it's time for our weekly journey into the exploration of the evolution of funk music. So I'm your host, F. Scott Funk Gerald, and now we're entering our 7th week here on Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? So I'd like to do just a little bit of a recap of the groovy and progressive percussive tunes that we have looked at through these decades, starting with the 1960s. We kicked off the evolution with James Brown, who is widely considered to be the godfather of funk. And we listened to artists such as Chaka Khan and even some Johnny Cash to explore those the bluesy side. And so we observed that the percussive sound of those funky bass lines actually derives from African and Cuban drum lines. And so these bass lines are meant to copy those percussive sounds. So in a way, are totally inspired by the African and Cuban sense of rhythm. And not only that, but a typical funk sound is characterized by the complex rhythm on the electric bass. So you pair that that rhythm, those that funky African jive, and then you pair that with some melody on the guitar, and there you go. You have that funk sound. So in the 60s, you see that sound developing, and you have the call and response vocals taken from gospel music and early blues music. And we listened to some James Brown, some Sly and the Family Stone, who... Larry Graham, the bassist of Sly and the Family Stone, really innovated that slap bass technique, which I think the most recognizable example of that would be the introduction to Seinfeld, the TV show, if you can imagine that sound in your head. But I also featured some Johnny Cash, some Canned Heat, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and even some Chaka Khan to show the ways that funk music influenced other genres throughout the 60s and 70s, and this is including soul, disco, folk, psychedelic rock. All of these just spawned and were influenced by one another, which is the most beautiful thing about art and music specifically. But we also talked about the dissipation of racism, because funk music derived from blues and the African-Cuban percussive sound, yet is so widely accepted by all cultures, you really do see the dissipation of racism in that genre of music. And a specific example of this, which we talked about in the blues episode 2 weeks ago, was B.B. King's performance at the Fillmore in San Francisco. And the white perception of this was very, very positive. This was a time when segregation was still going on, if not just mentally, and the civil rights movement was going on. So at one end of the spectrum, you have B.B. King creating beautiful music and influencing, you know, white people to see the beauty of that. And then on the other spectrum, you have Bob Dylan, who is, you know, a white blues musician, yet creating these songs that are becoming anthems of the civil rights movement, such as the song The Times They Are Changin'. So if that doesn't illustrate the dissipation of racism that can happen through music, then I don't know what does. But that's just one example of how music, and specifically funk music, can dissolve borders between people. So, all right, that was a nice little recap, but it's been a long week already, and it's only hump day. So let's get into a funky mood and explore how funk music was built upon in the 80s with the emergence of the explosive Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I'm going to set the mood now with a song from the Red Hot Chili Peppers' first album, released in 1984, and this is Green Heaven by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And you're listening to Penguin Radio.
Oh, big difference between above and below. A friend or a bro, leave your body on the floor. Let your spirit fly away like the soul of a pro. Here above land, man, is they hear the plan. And yes, it does include the Ku Klux Klan. We got a government so twisted and bent. Bomb things and guns, that's how our money is spent. We got VD, heroin, greed, and prostitution. Tension, aggravation, L1 Hubbard solution. Not to mention hydrochemical pollution. If you think a different way, you're in a mental institution. And that's a heartfelt shame. Cause everyone's crazy, everyone's the same. So watch it on a very dirty and Moby domain.
Hell yeah, that was Green Heaven by the Red Hot Chili Peppers right here on Penguin Radio. I'm F. Scott Funk Gerald, and welcome back to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? All right, so that was, like I said, Green Heaven by the Red Hot Chili Peppers off of their self-titled first album. And I was debating with my boyfriend today whether that was their first album or if it was their debut demo. But either way, that definitely earned them a lot of attention. So a little bit about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. They were formed in 1983 in Los Angeles by lead singer Anthony Kiedis and amazing bassist Flea. The group's musical style primarily consists of rock with an emphasis on funk, as well as other elements from other genres such as punk rock and psychedelic rock. And in the last song there, Green Heaven, you could definitely hear some heavy, heavier sound, which is characteristic of punk rock, and the kind of that just strange, atmospheric, outer space-esque ending there, which is totally characteristic of psychedelic rock, as well as one of their influences, the band Funkadelic, led by George Clinton. So when played live, they incorporate many aspects of the jam band style due to the improvised nature of much of their performances as they go into those funk breakdowns, usually towards the end, and impressive guitar solos. So they've won 7 Grammy Awards and have become one of the best-selling bands of all time, selling over 80 million records worldwide. And that's definitely visible, as they just appeared at the Super Bowl some 20 years later, more than 20 years later after they were formed. They performed at the Super Bowl, which I had a lot of mixed feelings about because... They performed with Bruno Mars, which I saw the performance and I thought it was very, very fun and very interactive to watch, especially at home. But the image that they portray now is arguably different from the soul that they started with back in the 80s. I don't think that in the 80s, when they were running around with tube socks over their groin, that they would have ever envisioned playing the Super Bowl. So I'm going to take you back to that time, back to the beginning of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and take you through their debaucherous history of sex, drugs, and funk. So the band was started by Anthony Kiedis and Flea, along with guitarist Hillel Slovak and Jack Irons as the drummer. Their first show, under the band name Tony Flo and the Masters of Majestic Mayhem, was performed in front of about 30 people, and consisted of Anthony rapping a poem he wrote titled Out in L.A. But the energy that they had in this totally unorganized performance caught them attention, and they were booked for several more shows. I think the rawness of their presence at this time, you know, these half-naked, sweaty dudes just, you know, bringing funk to the table, which was previously sort of African-American style, they're bringing it out, and they're doing it very, very well. They were booked for several more shows, and after this unexpected success, they changed the name to the Red Hot Chili Peppers after much brainstorming. Although Tony Flo and the Masters of Majestic Mayhem is a pretty cool name. But on their first record, they were pushed to have a cleaner, crisper, more radio-friendly sound, which they totally came to resent, since the soul of their music relies on that intense, energetic opposition to radio-friendly, society-accepted music. So let's take another listen now to a track from their first album, because it really does give you the feel of who are the Red Hot Chili Peppers, these crazy California boys getting crowds hyped for funk back in 1984. So here's the Red Hot Chili Peppers again with Baby Appeal, and you're listening to Penguin Radio.
Those thoughts, the fuck on me, I'm over. my box. I'll play the chili pepper so the puppet can rock. Excuse me, mister, won't you hear my thoughts? I'm playing a band, yeah, I'm called the Red Hot. While I'm a wee boy, I'm afraid not. I've got no time to think and talk, but it's me right down on the spot. She was a shaking and a kicking at it a bit of time. Her pop said no, but she just couldn't stop. The kid had a case of Tottenham.
All right, Baby Appeal. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Baby Appeal on Penguin Radio. Welcome back to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? And today we're talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers and their contribution to the funk genre during the 80s, 90s, and even now. I'm your host, F. Scott Funk Gerald. And so let's talk a little bit more about now their second album. So we know George Clinton from Parliament and Funkadelic, which are two master funk groups who we have listened to during this evolution of funk music. And so George Clinton produced their second album, Freaky Styly, which in my opinion is one of their best albums, Freaky Styly, because it's still very, very accurate to what they wanted the band to be, because it's so early on. It's just so pure as their intentions. So on their second album, Clinton combined various elements of punk and funk into the band's repertoire, allowing their music to incorporate a variety of distinct styles. And his liberal take to their music and his trust in their creative energy really helped them get along much better than with their previous producer, Andy Gill, from the band Gang of Four. Now, I think Gang of Four is a great band, but it was very surprising to see Andy Gill pushing the band for more radio-friendly, cleaner version. He obviously just wasn't on the same wavelength as Anthony Flea, Jack Irons, and Hillel. So during this time period, though, for Freaky Styly, the bandmates were indulging in copious amounts of heroin, which was a drug that was very big in that point of time, especially in that music scene. And their use of heroin had a great influence, a very large influence on the musical and lyrical structure of their music. So now let's take a listen to one of my favorite tracks off Freaky Styly, and that is Yertle the Turtle. And you can very much see here how these goofy, just not careless, but just very free-spirited, and they take things very lightly, and that element of fun is very clear in their music. So here's the next track called Yertle the Turtle, and you're listening to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic?
Get that turtle go, bro.
I'm a Bowie Island of the Southern Massage. A Yertle the Turtle was a king of the pond. A nice little pond, it was clean, it was neat. The water was warm, there was a plenty to eat. Until one day, the king of them all decided the kings, and his room was too small. I'm a ruler of all that I see, but I don't see enough, and that's the trouble with me.
Turtle go, bro.
then down from below in the great turtle stack came a bird from a plain little turtle named Matt. This part of the throne, this burping little turtle looked up and said, I beg your pardon, King Yiddle, I'm pacing my back, my shoulders and my knees. How long must we stand here, your majesty? Silence, the king of the turtles barked back to the bad burping little a turtle named Matt. I'm a judge of the turtle to old marvelous me, for I am ruler of all that I see.
Welcome back, listeners. You just heard Yertle the Turtle from the Red Hot Chili Peppers off their second album, Freaky Styly. So today on this Wednesday's edition of Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? With your host, my wonderful self, F. Scott Funk Gerald, we're talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers and their contribution to the funk genre. So yeah, as you just heard, that was Yertle the Turtle. And a fun fact, the opening line of that song, where it's, look at the turtle go, bro, was spoken by Anthony Kiedis's, one of his drug dealers, who came to the studio looking for money Anthony did not have. In order to buy himself some time, Kiedis featured him on the track, which made the drug dealer very pleased, and also Anthony a lot less nervous. they began recording the Uplift Mofo Party Plan, which was their first album recognized by a music chart. And despite their success, Hillel and Anthony's dependence on heroin was dragging the band down. Kiedis and Hillel were often semi-conscious and nodding off during important practices or recording time, or disappearing for periods of time. You know, and then showing up, calling to ask for money or for help or whatever. And unfortunately, their continued use resulted in their guitarist Hillel Slovak's death. And this sent the band absolutely reeling. One of the original four of their band was gone. And this sent the singer Anthony Kiedis further into his addiction. Kiedis did not attend Slovak's funeral, which really illustrates how messed up the entire situation was. I mean, here's one of his best friends, and he can't bring himself to mentally arrive at his funeral. Kiedis describes the time as surreal and dreamlike, and instead of facing reality, he went to the tropics for a mental health vacation with one of his girlfriends at the time. And this selfish yet somewhat understandable reaction caused a lot of dissonance in the band members for a period of time. You know, there was a lot of struggling and turmoil within each band member, and therefore the music was suffering. However, after, you know, by this time they had released Uplift Mofo Party Plan, and they had concluded their tour. This is 1997. And then after this, the band soon won the LA Weekly's Best Band of the Year award. So winning this award and experiencing Hillel's death, this motivated Anthony Kiedis to try and get clean off dope. However, this was only the beginning of the off-and-on love affair Kiedis would have with drugs. Jack Irons, also part of the original four, the drummer of Red Hot Chili Peppers, he decided he could not handle being in a band where his friends were killing themselves. So he quit and eventually joined the grunge rock band Pearl Jam. But shortly after Iron's departure, they chose Slovak's replacement as Dwayne McKnight, who is former member of Parliament Funkadelic. And he briefly filled in for Slovak when he was temporarily fired. Reasoning behind that was his drug use. And then also D.H. Pellegro of funk rock outfit Dead Kennedys replaced Jack Irons when he moved on to Pearl Jam. So with this new lineup set, Kiedis decided to enter rehab to work on his heroin problem. Kiedis entered a rehab facility called ASAP, and after 2 weeks into this program, he was taken by his counselor to finally visit Slovak's grave. And Kiedis had no desire to be there. However, his counselor, Bob Timmons, urged him to talk to Slovak. And within minutes, Kiedis, standing by the gravestone, had opened up and could not stop crying. 30 days later, it's reported that Kiedis left rehab and was ready to resume his career with the band. So sometimes it does take very dramatic events like that to kind of shift your way of thinking. Although this brings us to about 1988, which is one of my favorite periods that this band is going through, because this is where one of my favorite musicians of all time comes in, and that is John Frusciante. So after a couple tour dates with their new guitarist, McKnight, the one from Funkadelic, they fired him. Just lack of vibing together, I suppose. And drummer of the time, Pellegro, introduced the band to John Frusciante, who at the time was only 18 years old, which is incredible. I mean, younger than I am, and getting to play with one of his favorite bands. I mean, he was one of the Chili Peppers' biggest fans. You know, he studied their music and just loved them. And so, obviously, he vibed very well with the band right away after the introduction, and performed his first show with the band on September 17th, 1988. So the new lineup started right away, writing music for their next album. They went on a short tour dubbed the Turd Town Tour, because the promotion was mostly done in very small venues in, you know, kind of like middle of nowhere towns. So the Turd Town Tour. I really do love their nonsensical way with words. It's so fun, you know, like Yertle the Turtle, and in the first song we listened to, Green Heaven, you know, they're talking about peace, love, and whales floating through a liquid outer space, and it's just so fun. So anyway, Turd Town Tour, although in November, Kiedis and Flea felt the need to fire Pellegro due to his own various drug and alcohol problems. But much like McKnight, the guy from Funkadelic, Pellegro didn't take the news well. And it was Flea's turn to do the firing, and it was worse than the band could have imagined. Flea stayed in bed for days after, you know, having to fire this guy, and I think he even threatened to, like, burn down Anthony Kiedis' house. But all in all, this was part of, you know, Dead Kennedys, Pellegro's road to sobriety, which began right after he was fired. All right, so 1989, after they had hired a new drummer, Chad Smith, who's very explosive himself. so this new lineup released Mother's Milk and then Blood Sugar Sex Magic in 1991, both to critical acclaim. So Blood Sugar Sex Magic is my favorite of those two. I feel like it really embodies the energy that the Red Hot Chili Peppers have, especially after developing a deeper relationship with Frusciante. And since this was a moderately sober time for the bandmates, a sense of matured and more clear feeling and sensitivity shines through the melodic, you know, thanks to John, and the lyrical aspects of this album, thanks to Anthony. So now let's take a listen to a hit off Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Not necessarily one of the best songs off the album, but a song that definitely shows what they had become at this time period. So here is the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Suck My Kiss on Penguin Radio. Well, I'm sailing. Yeah. Welcome back. That was Suck My Kiss by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And you're listening to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? Happy Wednesday. I'm F. Scott Funk Gerald, and today is the Red Hot Chili Peppers Day. So, like I said, that was Suck My Kiss off Blood Sugar Sex Magic. And so moving on to their next albums, so after Mother's Milk and Blood Sugar Sex Magic, the success of those two albums in particular pushed the Chili Peppers into fame. Pure, adulterated, selling out arenas, girls screaming and throwing their t-shirts on stage, fame. Frusciante, being in his just early 20s and just stunned by the sudden mass appreciation of this, began to lose himself. Uncomfortable, Frusciante is recorded saying to Kiedis, "We're too popular. I don't need to be at this level of success. I would just be proud to be playing this music in clubs like you guys were doing 2 years ago." And, you know, I can understand that. You get to that level of fame and you begin to feel like you're putting on an act. And that's what Frusciante said, is you feel like instead of just going out to these venues, you know, performing for maybe 1,000 people, and you're up there and you're acting goofy and crazy. And that's because you feel that energy. And now it's a job. Now it's transitioned to you're expected to get up there and act a certain way to impress people, to portray that image. And he's not that type of person. So the pressure to keep doing that, pushed him, and he developed his own horrible, horrible drug habit. There's a video on YouTube, part of a documentary. I believe it's like an Eastern European documentary about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And you see Frusciante in it, and he looks like an alien. I mean, it's not even him. His face is gone, you know, his eyes are bugging out, his teeth are black and look twisted, and it's a horrible, you can just see it was just a horrible time for him. And that's why he left the band after the Blood Sugar Sex Magic tour. So, you know, after, you know, they lose another band member, and so the next album, One Hot Minute, released in 1995, really, really suffered because of, you know, the band's just missing Frusciante as part of their core. And by this time, Kiedis had relapsed on heroin, and they were once again struggling to keep going. However, even though Frusciante is not in it, I do enjoy One Hot Minute, and I think it shows the vulnerability of the band at the time. One of my favorite tracks off of the album is written by the bassist Flea, and it begins with a poem Flea wrote about growing up with Anthony. And I really identify with this because, you know, I grew up with a bunch of hoodlums and a bunch of hooligans, and the things that we would do and the trouble we would get into. And it's always difficult to look back and to capture the spirit of those times. And I struggled to do that in my own writing. But I feel like this poem that Flea wrote, which chronicles their troublemaking from being young kids, really, really does a good job of capturing that. It's a timestamp, absolutely. And you start to understand and empathize more with these characters. So this song or poem by Flea is called Deep Kick, and you're going to listen to it up next right here on Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? Here on Penguin Radio.
It started when we were little kids, free spirits but already tormented by our own hands, given to us by our parents. We got together on desks and slept in laundry rooms near snowy mountains, and slipped through whatever cracks we could find, minds altered, we didn't falter, and portraying hysterical and tragic characters in a small-filled universe. We loved the dirty city and the journeys away from it. We had not yet been or seen our friends, selves, chase tails round and round, downward spiral, leaving a trail of irretrievable vital life juice behind. Still, the brother's blood, comrades, partners, family curve was impenetrable. And we lived inside it, laughing with no clothes. And everything experimental till death was upon us. In our face, mortality. And lots of things seemed futile then. But love and music can save us. And did. While the giant gray monster grew more poisoned and volatile around us. Jaws clamping down and spewing ugly shit around. Nothing is the same. So we keep moving.
All right. So I had to play that one out to the very last chord there because I think the ending of that is just absolutely beautiful. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Deep Kick. That's off of One Hot Minute. And yeah, so that was the poem written by Flea, kind of commemorating his growing up with Anthony and kind of just like them being blood brothers. And no matter what, no matter the trouble, you know, the hooligan behavior that they get into, they are brothers. And I just think that that's just such a beautiful commemoration, especially at the end. You know, they say, you know, we keep moving, and that's exactly it. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, what Flea and Kiedis have gone through together, especially being in a band where there's so much, you know, struggling and creative discussion and arguments, and they're still friends. I think that's great. And the guitar at the end there, that kind of, you know, it's easy to describe it as like a dying bird, but it sounds to me like crying. And that sound is very characteristic of one of my favorite bands, Modest Mouse. That kind of like tweaking and very like weak and crawling guitar sound at the end there. And that just makes it an even more emotional song. So that was, again, Deep Kick by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So and off of One Hot Minute, unfortunately, after John Frusciante's departure from the band. So in these years after, you know, John quit the band, it became public that he had developed a very serious heroin addiction, which led him into poverty and near death. He lost contact with most of his friends. However, Flea always remained in contact, and he helped talk Frusciante into admitting himself into rehab in 1998. So, you know, at this point, 1998, One Hot Minute comes out. They fire yet another guitarist, and at this point, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are on the verge of a breakup. And Flea tells Kiedis, "The only way I can imagine carrying on is if we get John back in the band." And Kiedis is, you know, thinking there's no way Frusciante would ever want to work with them again. And with Frusciante free of his addictions and ailments, Kiedis and Flea thought it was appropriate time to invite him back. So in April 1998, when Flea visited him at his home and asked him to rejoin the band, Frusciante reportedly began sobbing and said, "Nothing would make me happier in the world." Isn't that just great? So Frusciante's back in the band, and they're jamming in Flea's garage. And, you know, Frusciante had been painting during this time, you know, doing a lot of dope and doing a lot of painting. And so his musical talent had kind of gone by the wayside. However, you know, they're jamming in the garage. He's getting better. And, you know, before long, Frusciante's, you know, got his talent back down to key. And so here he is back to contribute that just what I feel is a vital element of the Chili Peppers sound, as well as a healthy morale. So, you know, he brought with him his deep devotion to music, which had always had an impact on the band's recording style. So they begin working on their next album, Californication, which Frusciante says that his work on that album is his favorite. So I want to play you a track now that illustrates not only the Chili Peppers' incessant funk slap, you know, that arrogance and the energy that they embody, but also the more sensitive side and that just distinctive, like soul-tickling guitar sound that Frusciante brings to the table. So here is Other Side off of Californication, right here on Mommy, What's a Funkadelic?
I don't believe it's been slit in my throat. It's all I am. I heard your voice through a photograph. I thought that I've been brought up the path. Once you know you can never go back, I gotta take it on the other side. Centuries are what it meant to me.
right, welcome back to Mommy, What's a Funkadelic here on Penguin Radio. And so that was Other Side off of Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and dedicated this Wednesday to them and their contribution to the genre of funk music, starting at their formation in 1983. So I'd like to talk just a little bit about John Frusciante, because we just have a couple minutes left here. And in my opinion, he's one of the greatest guitarists of our time, and also the best guitarist to be in the Chili Peppers. He has a solo career and has been experimenting with electronic music, which he says the beauty of that is not having to rely on band members that you don't like to create the sound that you imagine, which I think is totally a result of having, you know, worked with the Chili Peppers and had these creative arguments and differences of what they saw the band becoming and the vision of their live performances. So he has a great band called Ataxia, and if you're a fan or looking for some new music, be sure to check that out. So I'm going to end this day after this funky, explosive, sweaty evening with a tribute to Maggot Brain, which is a song by Funkadelic that we listened to a couple weeks ago on this evolution of funk music. And this is John Frusciante's take and interpretation on that song. And it's called Before the Beginning. And I think you're going to enjoy this mellow closing of this evening. So I'm your host, F. Scott Funk Gerald, and thank you very much for listening. This has been another episode of Mommy, What's a Funkadelic? And have a great evening. Here is Before the Beginning by John Frusciante.